And welcome to another episode of the Nerdiest Podcast in the Midwest, one where we dive into the comics of Gore the God Butcher, the Midwestern Nerds Podcast. I'm your host today, Brian Stoffel, joined as always by my partner in crime,
K.O. Kyle Olson.
Like I said, have an exciting episode this week. We are going to be continuing our Midwestern Nerds Read series. We are going to be talking about the saga of the God Butcher. But before we get into that, like I said, we are the Midwestern Nerds. That's MIDWESTERNERDS. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Midwestern Nerds. We are the Midwestern Nerds Podcast on Facebook. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send that to MidwesternNerds@gmail.com. You can find and stream our podcast wherever you find a podcast. Before we get into the God Butcher saga, Kyle, I gotta ask, did you get a chance to rewatch Love and Thunder? Have any of your thoughts and your opinions changed on the movie now that you've had a little bit more time to think about it? All of these things I want to pick your brain at just before we get right into talking about the source material of Gore the God Butcher.
I did not get another chance to go. Life has been busy, but no, I don't really think any of my thoughts have changed either. I still really enjoyed the movie. Like, there's nothing that came up afterwards that really like made me question things or like really go back and think on why something. Like, I really did enjoy everything, and like I said back in last week's episode, I really think that this is a really good building block for the rest of what we're about to jump into. It feels like the second part of phase four.
And introducing our special guest this week, returning once again for another segment of the Midwestern Nerds Read, we have our friend of the podcast, Tom First. Tom, what did you think of Love and Thunder before we get into talking about the God Butcher saga, the comics? What were your thoughts and opinions on the movie? What were your thoughts and opinions on Christian Bale's Gore, all the things that happened in that movie? I want to pick your brain a little bit before we jump into the comics.
Absolutely. First of all, glad to be back. It's always fun. Every time I hop in a call, no matter how much time has passed, you know, it always feels like we're all just comfortable talking. So it's always awesome. So I'm always glad to be here. I read this because the initial timeline I was told was we're going to read this, we're going to do this, and then we're going to watch the movie. So I read this before the movie came out. So I had the knowledge of like what was happening here compared to what happened there. I'd say the movie's like a 7 out of 10. You know, it's like an enjoyable film. Eat some popcorn, eat some food, drink some soda. It's like, get your laughs in, right? I saw a thing on Twitter that was like, oh, well, it's a telling from Korg's perspective. So all the humor in it is just Korg, like, making a laugh. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess potentially, yeah, that makes more sense. I felt Gore could have been much better. And I'm getting worried by a theme in Marvel movies where the premise is getting weaker for the events that are happening, because you read this and you go, wow, Gore is very, very motivated and does a lot of interesting things to a lot of gods. And you get there and it's like, LOL, I took some kids. So I was like, okay, like it started off hot. And then I feel like it mellowed out significantly. I don't know if that was done to match the tone of the film more, because I could totally understand how like the next few parts wouldn't keep up with the happy cheery. But I guess I wanted more of that, because I felt like Christian Bale's Gore, even when he was talking to the kids and like all his hopelessness and despair, like that was all there. It was just the surrounding didn't match, you know. But getting to see all the other gods and Zeus and everything like that was really fun. One of the first post credit got me super hyped. So I was like, okay, there's like a lot of cool elements here, but you kind of look at Multiverse of Madness and it's like, well, I want my kids back. And now this one's like, I took some kids, you got to get some kids back. And it's like, yeah, but there's so much more depth to these characters that you could really raise the stakes. So I don't know if we're another thing that like has crossed my mind is, are we trying to mellow out other villains until we get the next like BBE, Big Bad Evil guy. So it's an interesting from there. So I feel like it had a lot of potential to be that much and more, and what we got was acceptable, if that makes sense.
It's interesting to hear you say that, because going into a lot of these Marvel movies with the comic book background knowledge that I have, I usually have the same stance that you have, where I read the book and I'm like, that was freaking awesome. Like, this character was great. The storyline was badass. I can't wait to see how they do it in the movie. And then, like, I would say 6 out of 10 times, I'm like, ugh. Like, I like what I'm seeing, but I liked what they did in the book more. And I don't know if it's just because of how I really wasn't on board with a lot of things in Ragnarok, that maybe like my expectations were lowered for this movie. We talked about it a lot last week, so I won't get into too many details about it. I love what Christian Bale did with gore. I wish we could have had more gore in the movie. And the end of his arc didn't fully work for me in the movie. And now rereading this arc in the books so that we can talk about it, I don't know if it was as satisfying in the book either. So I don't quite know how to tackle like the end of his arc. And I don't know if they really fully knew how to do it in the movie either. Like they had an idea, they ran with it. I don't know if I was fully on board with that idea, but it is what it is. And that's kind of, we'll see what they do going forward with that. But
the ending of the book is complicated for sure, because of all these parallels start getting drawn, and you can tell it's not what he had envisioned his path to be. So it's like, we'll get into that later, obviously, but it's like, how do you end that? And then how do you adapt it to a movie? So I feel like in a lot of ways, the Batman ruined me, because it was like, well, you took the Riddler and you amplified him and it worked perfectly. So I was just like, ugh. Just do it. Just send it. Make everyone like awesome.
So we teased a little bit of it, but now let's just get right into it. Starting with The God Butcher, Part 1, A World Without Gods. The gods are vanishing, leading Thor on a bloody trail that threatens to consume his past, present, and future. To save these worlds, Thor must unravel the gruesome mystery of the God Butcher. General thoughts on this issue. I thought it was a banger start to this run. The art is absolutely gorgeous. I love how it's got like this painted feel to it. Jason Aaron's writing is also gorgeous. It kind of has like a nuance to it, and like almost like a Victorian feel to it, but at the same time, it's not like bogged down. It's not like reading something like Shakespeare. Like it's got that air to it, but it's also simplified enough where it's like, okay, this sounds epic, but I understand what's going on. I understand where it's going with this. I love that we get all three versions of Thor throughout this book before they eventually meet up. So we start with the young Viking Thor. We get a look at the present day Avenger Thor. And then we get King Thor too. And we see how the God Butcher is affecting all of Thor's timeline. And then just that mystery of, who is this guy? Where did he come from? How is he doing all this stuff? And how is Thor going to be able to stop him? Overall, I thought it was a very solid first issue of this run.
Like, this is the first time I've read anything Thor, too. So this is my first experience in outside of the movies. It's cool. It definitely is confusing, jumping from three different timelines. I think that was my first issue. Spoiler alert for the rest of this. You're going to get a rare negative KO for a lot of this. I had a difficult time following a lot of this. I did not really dive in. I didn't really get into it as much as I wanted to, but I think right off the bat for me, it was very hard to like stay with the story with everything that was going on, you know, like it was really just like you said, it looking back, it was definitely like, here's the young guy, here's the middle guy, here's the old guy. And then eventually these three are going to meet. But for me, reading it at the beginning, I was like, why the fuck are we jumping so far in between three different timelines? I was so confused right off the bat.
I'd agree that it was initially a little confusing as to what we were trying to drive the point across of. This is one of the things I was a little bummed that wasn't adapted into the movie, but I can understand why it wasn't, especially if you're trying to incorporate the Mighty Thor with Jane and probably Natalie Portman's last outing with the MCU. So it's like, let's write her out properly. So maybe, who knows?
They left it open.
Open-ish.
So I like, I like that. On that point, though, I think that like there has been a theme in the early phase four of multiple of the same people, almost like almost in every project.
Right.
So like I like that they didn't quite, especially right after Multiverse of Madness. I don't know if they knew their release schedule when they were writing both of these movies, but it's actually probably a really good idea that they didn't do this timeline jumping right after that with multiple Thors, where they just did multiple Thors, but in a different way, where they kind of combined. Not as far as we read for this today, but this whole run, they kind of combined these two stories, and I thought it worked pretty well in the movie.
The one thing that I feel with current MCU Thor is his trajectory and his character arc, I feel like, could have potentially benefited a lot from this to meet a much younger version of himself and then the older version of himself. I'd just be like, oh, okay, you know, to kind of help his character progression. But I feel like his character still progressed enough in the film, kind of overcoming the big drawback, that thing that was holding him back in Endgame a lot and things like that. So now it's kind of more ambiguous as to where he goes from there. But for first book, it was pretty good. It was fun to see. I forget. Can we swear on this one?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thorf Bucks, bro. So, I was just like, that was one of the things that was like kind of taking me back at first, because it's like, oh yeah, he was in here. He's more open. He's ready to do the thing, you know. So it's just interesting seeing. It's a lot of fun seeing those parallels between how he's aged and what things remained and what things were like. Hey, you need to take life more seriously. But I thought this was a very good introduction of, there's this threat, people are dying, and we're gonna show it, and it has continued on. So this is a long story. This isn't something that's villain of the week, you know. It's a very good establishment.
When they first announced that Love and Thunder was going to be the God Butcher saga and that Natalie Portman was coming back to be Jane Foster as the Mighty Thor, with the knowledge of this story having three Thors, back when they announced it, I was like, oh shit, are we going to get Thor, like Chris Hemsworth Thor, Natalie Portman's Mighty Thor? And then I was like, are we finally going to get Beta Ray Bill as like the quote unquote third Thor? And like hoping. The three of them have to team up to take down Gore. All three of them run into him separately and like have to team up and take him down. That's where I thought the movie was going to go. It clearly did not do that. I think they could have done something with Valkyrie. I mean, like, yes, she was along for the ride and it was kind of like Thor, Jane, Valkyrie, and then Korg against Gore. But I think the parallel of like these three Thors, like one being the young novice, which could have been Natalie Portman, you know, being like, I'm just new at this, I'm the new god. You get the current present day Thor, which would be the Chris Hemsworth. And then Valkyrie could have been like the King Thor in this story version, since, you know, she is King of Asgard. And how wicked would it have been to see like what Asgard has gone through so far, and then like if Gore would have came in the beginning and just wiped out all of Asgard, and she's like the last Asgardian king, and being like, I'm a failed king, kind of like King Thor was in this book. It's not the movie we got, but if I was looking at this source material and I was Taika Waititi, I'd be like, like there's some interesting things that we could do here. But
how many times are you going to kill off all of Asgard?
Right? That's true. But again, we're not talking about what ifs movies. We're talking about the comics here. So I like that we, like I said, I like that we get the Viking Thor. I like that we go back in time and we see Thor, like you said, He's sleeping with all the women. He's having like orgies almost. He's just going out into the to battle for battle and coming back and partying and drinking mead and singing songs of their victories. And then we see the head of this god like in the water. That kind of sets the tone for the book of like, oh, like this is shit's gonna go down. Like things are about to go down here. Did anybody have any panels or any quotes from this first issue that really stood out to you that you felt were worth mentioning, worth bringing up?
I mean, the very last panel. Oh, yeah, that one too, which is actually in the movie if you watch close enough. For like 2 seconds, yeah, it's very. It's the shot of the three gods on the fish hooks.
And the butcher hooks, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you get that in the movie too, when they're looking at all the, when it says how many gods have been killed or whatever, and they're looking at all the different ones. You can kind of see that one for a sec. I like this very last one too, where Thor's going in to fight the shadow monsters for the first time too, right before the second book. That's a cool one. I like the art style a lot. The only thing that throws me off is how bulging the eyes look. It threw me off a lot of the times. Sometimes when you get a too much eye in the shot, like the eyes look like they are popping out of their heads.
I can for give Thor?
But for everyone, especially early when you got these dudes that he's saving with the rain. I mean, like some of their eyes are just like,
yeah, dude, their eyes are dry. There's no rain. Come on,
they're half out of their head.
Well, that's because they're dehydrated.
Okay, but Thor is the same way. Look at Thor right there. This is young Viking Thor too. It's the same way.
He's appalled.
It's just very, very, very protruding eyes threw me off.
I can understand the criticism there with that. For me, I kind of viewed it as like an emphasis on the facial, on what's going on, the reactions to kind of hit a little bit more towards home. A lot of times the eyes are bulging when someone's either shocked at something that's going on, or they're happy, or they're surprised. It's definitely noticeable in some panels. It didn't bother me too much. I will say though, when I was reading this in bed and my girlfriend's laying next to me, like there were a couple times where she looked and she's like, "Ugh, what's up with that person's face?" And I was like, "Oh, like I guess I can see that." But for me, it didn't bother me too much. But yeah, that full spread of the gods that are hanging on the butcher hooks is a shot to behold. And then Kyle, like you said, that last page of King Thor as he's about to take on the berserkers, you're like, what is going on here? I like on the second to last page where King Thor is standing right before he's about to battle. He catches Mjolnir in his hand. He's got that giant sword. That panel right there, and he's screaming. He would have words with the, like, that picture was just awesome as well. I've got some notes with some things that stood out to me. I felt like this run was very quote-worthy. Again, I feel like the writing was really good, and I liked the descriptiveness of some of the things that were going on in here. Some of the ones that stood out to me were, "Since then I have eaten more goats than the frost giant, drank enough mead to drown a dozen sailors, and made love to half the women in the village." Kind of sets the tone for young Thor, the Viking Thor. That line made me laugh a lot. When they find this first god, when young Viking Thor finds that head floating in the water, and he realizes that it's a god. One of the villagers says, "Look at that flesh. There's not a bite on him. He wasn't eaten. He was butchered." And I was like, oh, yeah. Like, knowing that this is the God Butcher Saga, that really got me going. Present Thor, when we're introduced to him, Kyle kind of mentioned it a little bit with Thor coming in, saving that planet with the rain and the god, when you were talking about the eye bulging. I love that this race, this planet, was about to die off because they just didn't have any like that. There was a drought that was going on for so long, and I love that Thor comes and literally saves the people with with a storm, with rain and thunder and lightning. It felt very fitting to the Thor character.
Well, and it just establishes him as one of the few gods that still does answer those kind of prayers. Like, he literally says that he heard the prayers from Cosmos away and comes in and answers it because he still believes in everyone. That was a very cool establishing story.
And I like, too, that this was something that I kind of wish we would have explored more in the movie. I like how much Thor seems invested in this right away and how much investigating he's doing. We see him go to planets among planets and just find them empty with all these dead bodies. And we got like hints of it in the movie, but not enough where it was like, okay, like we really feel the threat here. But even right away within like this first issue, you really feel that like, oh, like all these gods are dying and like nobody is realizing this until now. And Thor's like, I got to figure out what's going on. I already kind of mentioned it, but the introduction of King Thor, the future Thor, I really loved this introduction. I think that this character, this future iteration, is just badass and awesome. I talked about the stand-up panel with him already, but the text that's in that panel as well is just, and the setup is so good. It's, I am Thor Odinson, king of a broken Asgard, last of all the gods, and I would have words with thee. Like, just adds to the epicness of that character.
And just want to talk to him.
Yeah, just, and ending it with all of these berserkers that he's about to take on by himself. It's like, yes, I'm ready. Let's get into it. Any other final thoughts about this first introduction?
It's interesting with young Viking Thor too. I mean, obviously there's a point in his life where he can't hold Mjolnir yet. So like that was, again, very new to me, but like, obviously that's just not something I've ever explored before. So that was also something very interesting to kind of go through. He's so determined too, and I don't even know if he realizes what he needs to do it yet. So that was just pretty cool. But again, we'll come back to it when he finally sees a future version of himself holding it. He's like, oh, I can do this one day.
Maybe. Yeah, we can get there when we get there. He's pretty headstrong still.
He's got a few thousand years.
All right, Tom, you want to bring us into part two?
Sure. Let me get that pulled up again. The God Butcher Part 2, Blood in the Clouds. With his past, present, and future at stake, Thor must hurry to uncover the grisly secrets behind the unfathomable horrors of the God Butcher before it's too late.
Kind of what Kyle was talking about with the end of issue one. Issue two starts off with young Viking Thor trying to lift up Mjolnir, and we see that he can't do it, and he's struggling so much. Move, you blasted chunk of metal. And he's like, by the bristling beard of Odin, you are one stubborn hammer.
Love it. Yet again, Thor living vicariously through the hammer.
That was one thing I did appreciate about the movie, is we see throughout this entire comic story, it's he's talking to the hammer, and he's like, why is he talking to a hammer? And then in the movie, it's finally covered, oh, he's talking to Mjolnir, he's talking to Stormbreaker, and it's like, they made a humor out of it, but it's like, well, no, they actually adapted like a minor detail, but it's still cool that they adapted it. So it was one of those things where it's like, that's a win.
And his axe that Viking Thor has is pretty cool too. I wrote down the name of it. Jarnbjorn?
I can't imagine that's correct, but we'll go with it.
The way that it's spelled, Jarnbjorn.
Well, I'm
the only other way I would pronounce that would be Jarnbjorn, but that's
the thing. If we pronounce Mjolnir, if we pronounce Mjolnir the way it's spelled too, I mean,
Mjolnir,
Jonathan,
Jonathan.
But yeah, the axe is cool. I mean, at least he's got like a cool weapon to use other than just like, I don't know, a spear or something. This issue focuses mostly on young Thor, and this is basically young Thor running into and meeting Gorr. One of the things that really stood out to me right away is when we first see Gorr, Thor and the Vikings, they're out on the ocean, they're sailing, and they see this body that's like standing on the water, and it's kind of plays a reference to Jesus walking on water, but it's the exact opposite of Jesus the Savior. And I thought that this like intro to Gore was really sweet, of just like seeing the shadow on the water, and then I smell God flesh. I was like, oh yes.
I mean, comparing him to Jesus like that, it, like an early foreshadowing of what him becoming what he seeks to destroy. It's a very early tease to his fate, kind of.
It's Jesus with a motive, okay? Like,
no, I love the early shot, or like the three panels there at the bottom when we get the first look at the sword of it like manifesting through the darkness. I've seen that panel a lot with coverage of the movie, so it was very cool to see that and just see Gore for the first time in the comic here, and chopping off the leg and the head of a horse that Thor's riding. It's like just an awesome introduction. The horse was already bloodied. You can tell that his rider was already murdered on him. Like, it's super cool. The other one still has the body of the other god falling through the sky too. It very cool visuals in this.
I appreciated the dialogue of like, ha, our god's here. It's like, wait, where's our god?
But in those panels that Kyle was just explaining too, even the text in that panel, the clouds drip of blood, god blood. Mortals have died in these skies today, and it would appear the reign of death has just begun. Like, such good metal fucking writing in this book. Like, the dialogue and just the narration, the writing that Jason Aaron does in this book is absolutely phenomenal. It's a very strong start to his long and very highly praised run on Thor.
And we get an early reference to this Thor not being able to fly because it doesn't have Mjolnir. And it's like Gore's, you can tell Gore's trying to make these gods feel mortal. You know, like feel helpless as all the people that worship them do before he kills them. It's a very interesting psychology to what he's doing.
Yeah, I love that Thor just comes into this battle right away. He's like cocky, like, okay, like whatever's going on, like I can take this down. And the tables quickly turn on him. And by the end of this issue, Gore just freaking wrecks young Viking Thor. Like, just totally takes him out. Doesn't kill him.
Yeah. I appreciated the story of the mad god that Thor had visited. It's like, I've seen, like, the eyes of almost, like, the sociopath, you know? Just man on a mission, man that's murdered in cold blood and has no remorse for it. And it's like, that's the thing. It's like, they don't feel that remorse. They don't feel bad. They don't comprehend that they did something wrong. So just kind of like him recognizing that in the eyes, recalling another god like that, was like, I'm sure that while it's not explicitly really said, I'm sure it struck fear into Thor of like, okay, like this is something I'm gonna have to deal with. This is a very serious threat.
And that's basically the majority of this issue, is just young Thor first meeting Gore the God Butcher and very epically losing that first round against him.
The line of like, what was Thor the god of before he died? Just thunder, and then huge lightning bolt there. Oh, that was awesome.
All right, Kyle, take us away with issue 3.
The God Butcher Part 3, The Hall of the Lost. Following the bloody wake of murdered gods across the depths of space, Thor tracks the God Butcher into the present, discovering a forgotten cave on Earth that echoes with the cries of tortured gods. The thunder god is shocked to find himself among them.
We get one of my favorite panels in this one.
Is that the one they recreated in the movie?
Yes.
Yeah, it's such a good one. What is it? And Falagar the Behemoth. Would have loved to see Falagar in the movies, but that's okay. Like, actually Falagar, live Falagar.
I liked that we got this shot in the movie. I think I might have said this in our spoiler review, Kyle, but like the weight of this scene, I felt a heck of a lot more in the book here than I did in the movie. Like the movie was just like, oh yeah, I knew him, he was cool, where this was like, no, like I knew this guy, like he was a great god, everybody loved him, like, and I just feel the weight of seeing this giant dead body in front of me and feeling the weight of all of these gods just being dead, like, and nobody knows about it and nobody's doing anything about it. I was going to say, I love that we start off in Omnipotent City. I liked seeing that in the movie, reading the book. We spend a bit more time in the book at the city than we do in the movie. I like that he's trying to do research on some of these gods, trying to find some answers here. And he goes to the librarian, and we go to this other planet, and all these gods are nailed up on the tree. Again, this book shows how metal this story can be. And I understand how some people were very disappointed with the movie, being how light toned it could be at times. When you get like something like this, that was like so epic and so metal. And I like that present Thor, like our Avenger Thor is what they call him in the book. I like that the struggle that he's having, like his internal struggle with gods as a whole, but just everything that's going on throughout this book. One of the lines that really stood out to me right away was when he's discovering all of these dead gods. He says, "What does it say about the gods in this universe that no one has ever even noticed or cared? What does it say about me?" And I like that throughout this whole book, even up until the end, which we'll get to, he's questioning on the place of the gods and if they are relevant, if they are even doing any good, if they do still need to be around or not.
There's I appreciate two things from the librarian scenes where it's like, why are you here? You're like a war god. You've never really visited here. And it's like, no, like you need to listen to me. Like something's actually going on. And like, I felt like it was a new level of maturity for Thor as he was experiencing that, while also like, oh, okay, maybe he's finally come around to be responsible. And then the other thing was using Mjolnir as like a lamp or a flashlight. It was also one of those things that they translated into the Love and Thunder, which I thought was very small, but really cool to see. They were on Gore's like black and white world. I forgot what they called it in the film. But Jane was using Mjolnir at some point as a light. So I was like, oh, there we go. All these little small things.
I loved in the movie too how that whole scene was black and white until she lit up Mjolnir, and then like wherever the light was touching was in color and the rest of it was still in black and white. I was like, ooh, that is so awesome.
We also we get Tony Stark in here. We get Iron Man. Yep. Which is really cool. Sad, but cool. I believe he tells him to go to Olympus, doesn't he?
Yeah, he tells him to go to Olympus to... I can't remember now.
I like when they get to the cave with... when Iron Man and Thor get to the cave. And Iron Man goes, "This isn't another Viking strip club, is it? Because I had to burn a whole suit of armor after that last one." And then I love the dialogue too when he's walking into the cave and Thor says, "This is where the god butcher taught me to fear." Like again, we feel the stakes and we feel the gravitas behind this villain. We feel the scale of it, which sometimes in the movie I don't feel like fully came across, but again, it shows how good the source material can be at times. And I also love to, before we get Iron Man in here and before he goes into the cave and he's Avenger Thor, present Thor, is going to all these planets and all he's finding is these dead bodies and Gore's berserkers is what he calls them. And he's killing them. And finally, he's just getting so fed up with it. And he goes, "You want to kill gods? Well, here stands the god of thunder. Come kill me, worm. Come kill Thor if you dare." And then God Butcher, and he's just like so enraged, and he's got Mjolnir going off with the lightning and the thunder. And I scream until my throat is raw, until they hear the rumble of thunder from worlds away. The hammer hangs heavy in my hand, but I cannot stop. I will not stop. Again, so much good dialogue that's just like, ooh, it just kept driving forward, where I was like, yes, I need to keep going. I need to see where this is going. What's going on? We get a flashback with Viking Thor to see that he is still alive, that he is still okay. And he asks for like a recap of what happened from one of the guys. He's like, "What happened?" And after he gets updated, he goes outside because they found another god. And I love that he says, "Bring me meat and mead, and then my axe." I like that it's like in that order.
And then we get introduced to a god who I thought was just, you know, just there. And then all of a sudden plays a very big part later in these books.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the coolest moments for me. We'll get to it later. But that specific reveal was like, that actually made me sit up in my chair. I was like, oh, that's cool. Because I knew what was coming. I had mentioned it last week, too.
Shadrach, you can definitely tell that he's gone crazy from the torturing of Gore. He hides in this cave because he's like, this is the last place that Gore would come looking to find me. I love that throughout the story, we never know what exactly he's the god of. Like, we know he's like, we get the sense that he's the god of like bombs, because that comes up later in the story in a big part. But throughout like the first couple times we see him, like, his story is always changing. He's the god of something different every time.
I was so confused by that.
And but it makes sense how that he's hiding it. I don't remember if it's here that he says it or if it's later in the book, but how metal is it though when he's like, "Yeah, Gore sliced off my eyelids, so I had to watch my entire world get butchered in front of me." Like, it's that level where it's like, dude, like the potential that we could have had with Gore in the movie. Like, again, I like what we got. I just wish we would have gotten a little bit more. Any final thoughts on part three before we go into part four?
He called Tony Stark a god. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. I think that might play into the movie. I don't know if we're going to get actual Tony, but like, there is a theory that he might be up in Valhalla as well. Yeah. No, my favorite panel from this one was a couple pages back. Where was it? It was in the cave. When you just get that one singular panel of Gore's eyes in the darkness, I love that kind of thing. It looks so cool.
I just want to talk about one thing from the movie real quick. Why did they commercialize the single most traumatic item in everyone's lives in the MCU? It was like Infinity Ice Cream or something, and it's just the gauntlet. Yeah. I was like, what are we doing?
Infinity cones. I liked the joke, but I didn't really think of that.
I was like, thing that made me disappear for 5 years. Y'all have some ice cream.
Marketing, it's tourism.
Yeah, I think my favorite part of this issue was the cameo of Iron Man. I liked that in the two pages that he was in, you really felt the camaraderie between these two. Like, they're not just teammates, but they're in a sense brothers, where Tony knows Thor better than you would realize until he starts talking, where he's like, dude, I've never seen you like this before, and the fact that like you're scared is freaking me out. And the fact that Thor, like Tom said, tells Iron Man that through all the things that they've been through, like, he considers him to be a god as well. And so I thought that was definitely the strongest moment in this issue. And with that, The God Butcher, part four. The Last God in Asgard. Will King Thor join the list of those who have perished against the monstrous might of the god Butcher? This is the issue where we kind of get a sense of what's going on with King Thor, with the future Thor. We've seen him in the first three issues. He shows up and he's just in Asgard fighting these berserkers. And it's like, has this been like an immortal battle that's been going on for like ages upon ages? And I like that the biggest torture that you can have is having you be the last god and refusing to kill you. And
punishing you for being immortal, outliving literally everyone. I thought that was so, like, the first establishing shot where he's just being lifted up by the shadow monsters and the fucking bloody Mjolnir. So cool.
Or like having the shit continuously beat out of him, but not enough to kill him. So that he just has to wake up and just like, all right, now you're sad and sore.
Right? He literally asks him at some point. He says, come back here and kill me. Literally do it. Quit playing around.
And then the narration right next to that says, he won't even let me die. Yep. This was the issue where we find out about Shadrach, where.
Yeah. Dark. Super dark.
Yeah, first he says that he is the god of wine and waterfalls, and later he says that he's the god of something else. But
donuts
this is,
and
yeah,
pancakes, just, I think, at one point.
Yeah, like definitely shows like the more mad he's becoming.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to Omnipotent City, and then we see the berserkers there burning down the library. And the librarian stabbed, and I was like, "Oh, dang, this." This is why, Kyle, I thought that Gore was going to show up, because he does come in one sense or another to Omnipotent City. And I was like, ooh, like as soon as they were there and they're like, he's no threat. We don't worry about him. I'm like, oh, this is where they take him for granted. And he comes and he's like, nope, this is why you should fear me. And then that's.
But again, then they would have feared him and then they would have teamed up with Thor and then we wouldn't have got the rest of the movie.
I don't know. I feel like I feel like they would have spun it on him. Been like, you led him here. Like, this is your fault that he killed like all these gods. And like, that would be their reason to turn on him, because like, he wasn't even supposed to be there. And the fact that they'd be like, you led him here. You know, it's easy to point the fingers and blame.
We needed more gore. We needed more gore in Thor 4.
Yes.
That's what we needed.
One of my favorite panels in this issue is when he's torturing young Thor in the cave. And Thor's just hanging upside down and he's sitting on that rock and he's talking with him. That panel is awesome. And just some of the close-up shots of Gore, too, where I get how people could be like, oh, yeah, he would look like Voldemort in the movies. But like, he looks the way that they drew him in this. Maybe it's just like the teeth or the way that the eyes look, but he looks vicious.
So as a Dragon Ball fan, I could not look at Gore and not see Frieza a lot of the time. And it makes sense because Frieza was also a piece of shit. So it was just one of those things where it's like, oh, I guess I could see parallels between the few things, right? But it's like, you should have just went for it. It's so terrifying.
So I guess to paint a picture for our listeners, Gore in the comics is if Frieza and Voldemort had a baby, that's what it would look like.
Which again, I'm so glad that they let Christian Bale keep his nose. Otherwise it would have just been, it's so many comparisons to Voldemort.
It wasn't the nose that I was like, aw, like I wanted the head tendrils. Like,
yeah.
I wanted him to look a little more alien instead of just being like, oh, here's another like somewhat human looking person. True. Like, here's another somewhat looking thing.
I can see why they didn't do it though, because now we have his daughter as a character in the MCU, and like then they would have had to do it. And I can see why they chose not to.
Yeah. So it's right at Thor, just goes, Ovidi Kadivi. This is the issue where we start to see the pool, right?
Yeah, towards the end. Before we get to that, we get just more of the King Thor stuff. Like, after the Berserkers put him on the throne after they fought him, like, throughout the first three issues, and he just wants to die. It's so epic that the next time we come back to him, he's literally crawling through the streets of a dead Asgard, saying, "I will not sit on that blasted throne, not a second longer. If I cannot walk to my death like a god of the Vikings, I will crawl to it like a wounded dog." And then he calls Mjolnir, and just that panel of him, like, slowly getting up from the stairs and, like, weakly saying for Asgard, as the Berserkers are coming back to fight him once again. Like, just so epic. So epic. Let's talk about Cronux, the Palace of Infinity.
This is where it really started to get confusing for me.
Fair. Very fair.
Yeah.
This was the part where I was like, dude, this is as far as I got before I saw the movie. So, Kyle, do you remember when we were recording the episode before the movie came out? And I was like, I'm starting to get nervous. Like, this whole part with Cronux in the Palace of Infinity, I was like, there's no way that they can go this dark and this metal and this badass. And I was like, that's when I was like, I'm starting to get nervous now.
If they would have done that, holy shit.
Shut up. Shut up.
It's a Taika Waititi comedy. They were never going to.
Give me R-rated Thor.
We can't have
murder everywhere.
We can't have Taika fucking direct it then.
They could.
But to put in perspective for our listeners, so Gore is slaughtering all of these gods on Cronux, and there's this pool in the Palace of Infinity that this pool allows you to, like, travel through time, and Gore is draining all the blood from the gods in this pool in order to gain the power of the gods and the ability to travel throughout time and space to slaughter all gods, to wipe them all out, no matter what point in time they would come from. So freaking metal. I love one of the quotes that really stood out to me, or one of the lines of dialogue while he's doing this, while he's filling up this pool with the blood. He says, "In my travels, I have learned that there are two kinds of gods, those who do harm and those who do nothing at all. I've yet to decide which I find more worthy of my wrath."
That's so crazy. And then right after that, we get one of my favorite panels. It's just him in the pool. They will all be dead. And then it's just, oh.
Well, the last page of this issue, too, with Avenger Thor standing in the ruins of future Asgard with King Thor. It looks like he's finally about to bite the dust. And then Avenger Thor comes out of nowhere, present Thor. He says, "Where is the Butcher of Gods?" And he's just standing there all bloodied up. And it's just, like, so awesome.
I thought the two parallels were really nice, so close to each other, where it's like, here's me enacting my plan. And it's like, all right, I'm ready to just ruin your day.
All right.
I liked this one a lot. This one was about where I finally was, like, fully invested. So I was like, okay, people are not dying. We're starting to merge the Thors. This guy's going crazy. It's like, all right, we have enough tools here to, like, finally start moving it along, I felt like, and it certainly did that shortly after.
I was pretty invested the majority of the way through, but I will agree, this was the issue where we finally started to put our foot on the gas pedal a little bit more. Tom, you want to take us away with issue number 5?
Sure can. The God Butcher Part 5, Dream of a Godless Age. The shocking finale of The God Butcher. Three Thors from three eras race to stop The God Butcher. The full extent of his vicious scheme takes terrifying shape. It said finale, and I was like, hold on.
But yeah, because he's not butchering after this. He's going straight to his. It's kind of what we got in the movie, right? Like in the first, 15 minutes, he butchers everyone.
No, I'm about to say something that's going to not.
I'm just saying, the movie is more of this second half where we get the God Bomb, right? The movie is him enacting that final plan to take them all out instead of being the butcher. I get that we should have had more butcher. I agree with that. I'm just saying. We kind of skipped over these first five parts in the movie. We kind of just glossed over it all.
Have you ever heard of the Final Solution?
No.
Oh, okay. So quick history lesson. That was essentially Hitler's final plan at the Holocaust. So that's what Gore starts doing here. I truly feel like I will forever parallel Gore with Hitler, especially as we start coming up here. Because it's no longer, hey, I'm going to do all these like steps to get here. It's, I'm here, I'm powerful, and this is the final plan. We're doing it. So it's like, coming out of that movie, I was like, that Gore was not the Gore I just read.
That's fair. Before we dive fully into the issue, we haven't really talked about them yet, but the covers so far all have been really good. This one definitely stands out to me. It's our present day Avenger Thor up against Gore, and it's just a really sweet battle shot of them. Definitely could be like a painted picture framed up on my wall. I would not be sad about it.
I think if I had a poster, it'd be Falagar.
I really like these next couple of pages. They're just so colorful.
I remember when I was reading this, I was a little confused at what was going on here at the start. We get this giant like baby looking god thing that Gore travels to and kills, cuts out his heart.
Yeah.
And this giant heart
carries it out.
It looks like a giant sack of potatoes. I like the transformation that Gore's been making through here too, and then especially towards like the end, he definitely goes from this alien-looking thing to more of like the shadow monster. And I like seeing like the transformation of it and his armored appearance throughout it too.
Well, like he fills out more too, because he was like very thin, and then it's like he just gets stronger. He gets more godlike, you could say.
Interesting. No, like you mentioned on the cover too, like it's like the darkness is pouring out of him at this point. Like it's becoming a part of him.
That's probably the most metal thing. It's just a giant god baby heart coming out of the pool.
A pool it's of like, blood. Huh.
And then we get more of young Thor being tortured in the cave, and it's really showing how vigilant this Thor is and hard-headed and determined that he's lasted this long. And even Gore's like, I've been doing this for 17 days. Like, do you want me to stop yet? And just when our young Viking Thor is finally like, yes, I want you to stop, he gets rescued. The Vikings of the village that he's been staying at finally find him. And this moment really kind of stood out to me, because this was the first time where we see a weakness in Gore, where he's caught off guard and by surprise. The fact that mortal men are almost taking him out in this moment.
Well, because at the end of the day, he's also mortal, but he has these new powers that are making him so strong. Yeah, it's almost like yes, these powers are immense and they can kill gods and everything, but at the same time, his plan has to be perfectly executed, because one wrench in the plan like this can throw a lot off.
There's also, I think, a lack of comprehension of like, well, the gods have wronged me, they've taken lives and prevented lives from being saved. Why are you risking your lives for this one god? Yeah. And it was, I think, also an internal struggle of, I don't want to be the one that kills you, because like, I'm doing this for you. it, and then it just kind of got, well, I'm about to die, so I guess I gotta kill these kids, you know, like, gotta kill these humans, you know. So it's just, it was one of those things where it's just, I'm sure it was extremely bewildering to him, because it was almost like a fallacy of composition where it's, well, this happened to me, so clearly everyone struggles with their relationship with the gods, right?
Well, the best line that he has, your Vikings taught me two important lessons that day. Thor, one, that mortals' childlike fear of godless world is far stronger than their fear of death, no matter how painful. Like, that's what he's learned. Like, his people basically gave up, but these people are still fighting for it. Like, they're scared of not having gods, but he doesn't understand that. He's trying to create that world.
One, I think my favorite panel in this issue is the panel of, so it's during the Viking battle in the cave with Gore, when he's, you know, trying to talk some sense into these Vikings, and then Thor comes up from behind with his axe and just lifts him up in the air, like with the blade of his axe up through his back. That panel alone is just like, oh, dude, chops his arm off.
So cool.
Yeah, that was a standout panel for me in this issue.
More good writing in the panel right below that too. It was you thought you were killing me that day in the cave, but instead you saved me. You saved me from a life of failure. You saved my dream, and for that I will forever be indebted to you, Thor of Asgard. That is why you died last.
Yes.
And I was like, oh. And it's like, we finally learned what happened in the cave, because up until this point, it was, this cave is like this very taboo situation on both ends, where it's like, I don't want to go back to the cave, but he doesn't want to go back to this cave. So it's just, first clue is going back to the one place you don't want to go back to. And then
they both learned fear that day.
Kind of, yeah.
This is where we find out too, how present Thor gets to the future. He gets to this Cronux, the Pool of Infinity, I think it was called in the last issue. So present Thor finds Gore, tries to take him out, fails, and jumps into the Pool of Blood to try and catch Gore. And then we find out that he makes it to Asgard, but he's 900 years too late.
It's also that one panel where Gore is holding the heart and is just building myself an army was just the beginning. With these next steps, I go to explore new horizons of Deicide. It's another one of those strong parallels to Hitler, as I had mentioned earlier, where it's, he implemented a plan and all of a sudden we know what happens next, right? So it's just, it's crazy. That's the one thing I feel like Marvel does well in, is just removes the situation from reality to teach you lessons on it in a comic. And you see it a lot with X-Men, right? And so you just kind of see these parallels, and it's like, all right, well, if someone isn't too keen to learning history at that point in time, they can see this and then kind of relate to something that they were more interested in and kind of comprehend that topic more. But it also teaches that lesson of what he's doing is wrong. Like, this is wrong. And then you can, it's just one of those things that I feel like Marvel does a good job of. We're going to take the serious topic. It's still a serious topic, but we're going to make it less, in this situation, I also want to say depressing, but it's still very valuable to know.
All right, Kyle, take us away with issue 6.
What the gods have wrought. Discover the dark origin of Gore and the truth behind his bloody quest to butcher the gods. Again, tying back to the movie, I very much like I liked in the movie where we got the origin right away. I prefer it that way. I think I mentioned during the movie review that I don't like when we get a villain for so long and then we get the origin. Thankfully, I knew the origin going into this, so that helped. I might have been disappointed if I was reading this the first time, but I do still like the origin too, where it's like he's praying to the gods to save, not himself, he's literally sacrificing himself, but he's like, just save my people, save my daughter at this point, like save my kids. Like, and then he basically is like, oh, there are no gods. If they're not answering me, then okay, that's fine. There's just no gods. We're here to fend for ourselves. And then all of a sudden, two gods that are fighting crash into the planet, and the god is like, help me. It's like, what do you mean, help me? What, you're a god? No, you're supposed to be helping me. Like, our people are dying. Like, I thought, again, very good reasoning. I very much like the origin of Gore. It's a very, very interesting and very sympathetic way to set up a villain.
I will agree that I also appreciate that they opened the movie with the origin. I feel like it could have been longer, a little bit, just to flesh it out a little bit more and have more of the loss that he incurred there kind of be seen. I like what they did with the god. He's like, I'm just eating, you know, this guy's dead, whatever. Like, we're celebrating. Like, that part worked. I would have loved to see the battle.
Yeah.
Just
because he did kill, cool. So he literally killed. I mean, it's almost the same thing where he killed someone right before Gore got there too. But he's like wasting resources too. So again, it fits into what's going on.
But it just could have been a little bit more fleshed out in the movie. But it's very fleshed out here. It's very sad. It was one of those, like, this is one of those chapters where it's like, for me personally, when I typically read stuff, it's like, do I care?
Right.
You're doing bad things. Do I care? And it's like, I read this and I was like, that was one of the best of the things I've read so far. It's like a lot of context given, but not given in that same vein.
The best villains have that tint of like, oh, I understand what you're doing. You may be going about it a different way than I would, but like, I understand your motivation. Like, those are the best villains every time.
I agree with the majority here. The majority stands that I like that they opened it up, the movie up with the origin right away. I also agree with Tom, where I wish they would have gotten a bit more into it. The fact that young Gore's mom is eaten by sand tigers, then we see Gore with a family. He's got a wife and multiple kids, a pregnant wife. The pregnant wife falls from a cliff, and all of the children starve to death. So I liked that we saw that. He then gets outcast by his people because he's not going about their religious ways when he's burying his last child. And this is basically where he gives up. He gets outcast. We see him just starving to death, barely struggling to survive. Then that's when these gods come in and crash. And the one is like, you know, help me. I agree with Tom. And again, hindsight 2020. If I was doing that opening scene, I would have had a bit more of like the family stuff first. Then how the movie opened is what I would have done. I would have had him go into that jungle and in the middle of that battle and see the one, like, see some, like, the end of that battle with the god killing the one. And then having the one be like, save me. And then him being like, just kind of mesh all of that together to get this, that goodness of it. But yeah, in this book, the one god is about to die. He says, help me. And then that's when Gore's like, help you, help you. Nobody helped me. And he gets the necro sword and then goes off away. I was surprised to see that the first god that we see him torture is Volstagg. I was like, wait, what? Like, I'm so used to seeing Volstagg in a lot of Thor stuff, which is one of the things that made me mad about Ragnarok, was the fact that, like, they're just, like, tossed aside right away without a thought. But I was shocked. I did not remember that this was Volstagg. This is like my second time reading through this. But yeah, I did not remember that was Volstagg. And just looking at pictures, you wouldn't tell. You wouldn't be able to tell. Because Volstagg is always like that bigger, fatter god. And it shows how long he's been torturing him. The fact that, like, he is skin and bones. And he's got a long mane of hair. He's got a long beard. So I was shocked to see that it was Volstagg. And then he nails him up on a cross.
Amazing full page of Volstagg there at the end. Just, I mean, a terrifying, obviously, and disturbing, but just look at the artwork and the presentation of it looks awesome.
It's one of those panels that it's like, I get why some things weren't in the movie.
Oh yeah, of course.
Because all of a sudden it becomes there's a war on Marvel, all this thing, because there's a lot of heavy, like, topics that are being explored in this series. So it's like, some of it makes sense, but at the same time, the movie's only 2 hours. You could have put 15 more minutes in to make the intro longer.
It's one of those things where, despite how I feel about any of the Marvel movies, if I love them or hate them, it's always worth going back to the source material. If you love the movie, you can go and look and see what inspired that. If you didn't like the movie, you can go back and see, okay, how could things have been done differently? Regardless, I've come to realize, especially with the Marvel movies, if they're choosing a storyline or an event to focus on for a movie, there's got to be a reason for it. Like, there hasn't been one movie that the source material has been kind of eh for, in my opinion. There's always something good to get out of that source material where you're like, ooh, that's awesome. And all media is different. So again, if you love the source material, that's great. And you hate the movie, go back to the source material. You still have that. If you love the movie, you have both. I mean, it's the best of both worlds at that point then.
If you don't like the movie, go, like you said, go back to the source, but there nothing will ever change the source material. It will always be there. It won't, you know, it won't change anything. Just go back and enjoy that.
It's what I did with Ragnarok.
It's like wild to hear that you didn't like Ragnarok.
How you felt about the things of Love and Thunder that disappointed you because you had read this book, go and read Planet Hulk, and then go and read any Ragnarok storyline. No. Oh. I have a love-hate relationship with that movie. Like, as a movie, it works. But when I look at the source material, like, it almost disrespects it at times. Like, Korg is a great example where I love Taika Waititi's Korg in the movies, but that's not the Korg that's in the book. And the Korg that's, like, in the source material in the books, he's a very important character in the Planet Hulk storyline, which is where all the Hulk stuff comes from, and Gladiator Hulk and all that. And so, to see the depth of that supporting character in the source material, to then see the exact opposite portrayed on screen, I was like, I'm laughing and I'm loving this character on the screen, but that's not the Korg I know. So, okay. And again, it's one of those, like we all just said, if you don't like the movie, you always have the source material. Thankfully, I can go back to that source material. But again, I don't hate Korg in the movies. There's just some choices and some decisions that were made in Ragnarok that I feel like, and this is going to sound very hipstery of me and douchey, but like, I almost feel like I was ahead of the curve when it comes to Love and Thunder. Because I feel like a lot of the issues that people have with Love and Thunder are the issues that I have with Ragnarok. And so, going through Ragnarok, my expectations were almost lowered for Love and Thunder, where I was like, I know what I'm expecting here. And I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would, probably because those expectations were lowered. But that's just my quick general overall thoughts on Ragnarok. I want to one day get into Planet Hulk as a Midwestern Nerds Reads, because that was one story where I begrudgingly went into it. I was not a Hulk fan. I was one of those people where you see the Raging Hulk in the movies and all that, and that was my perception of Hulk. And I was like, there isn't a whole lot of good storytelling that you can tell with like a big berserker, almost like baby type, like being. And then it was like, no, you have to read Planet Hulk. And so then, like, I begrudgingly took the book from a friend. I was like, all right, I'm gonna get into it. And then I was blown away. I was like, I did not expect this at all from a Hulk story. And so one day I would like to do that for a Midwestern Nerds Reads. There's a quick there. Uh, too quick side tangents to add a little bit more beef to this episode. But with that, I think we're going to wrap up part one here at issue 6. We're going to skip some best off of the week for this week, just because this episode, I don't want to put out hour and a half to 2 hour episodes every week. So
yeah,
we'll put that aside for this week. We'll maybe get into it next week. We have been your Midwestern Nerds. That's MIDWESTERNERDS. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Midwestern Nerds. We are the Midwestern Nerds podcast on Facebook. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send that to MidwesternNerds@gmail.com. Please remember to rate and review, share and subscribe. You can find our podcast wherever you can find a podcast. All of those things help this channel to continue to improve and grow and be the best Midwestern Nerds show that we can give you guys and give you the content that you want to hear. If we're doing something that you think we could improve upon, let us know. If you love what we're doing, also let us know. All these things are very helpful. I would like to thank our guest, Tom, for joining us on this first part of this ride this week.
Keep it nerdy.